The tales are depraved and spooky. The drinks they sip are boozy. Tune in and you'll hear a doozy. The Tipsy and Depraved.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tipsy and Depraved. We are a podcast that will go over all of the juicy and morbid tidbits and events that have happened throughout history. My name is Chelsea.
I'm Jackie.
Oh, doubled. Jay. And so basically how this podcast works is every week one of us, or every other week, one of us takes the lead as the master of depravity for that episode. We pick the topic and the drink. And then we all rotate turns telling a little story from that topic. It's a great time. And this week is overthrown monarchs or leaders. And I will be going first today.
What are we drinking, Chelsea?
So because we're going over overthrown monarchs or leaders that got ousted or murdered or whatever, we are going to be drinking AMFs, also known as Adios, motherfuckers. So... I am too deep already, so that's why this is sounding real great already. And I think the drink kind of explains itself as why it was picked for this topic.
I think this one is the most fitting for this topic.
Yeah, I when I figured out my topic and the drink that I was pairing, I did a maniacal, like, giggle. It's like, perfect.
It's perfect.
All right, so without... further ado, let's just hop right into our stories. I will be going over some family drama in England, which was a period known as the War of the Roses. There are a lot of names and people in play, and they all have the same names. Everyone is either a Richard, a Henry, or an Edward.
So this will be easy to understand and follow.
Super easy. I come up with nicknames for everyone as another Henry, Richard, or Edward is introduced. So you'll be able to hopefully keep up. So as I'm already a bit tipsy, I'm going to try and make this presentation of depravity as straightforward as possible. But the story is just, it gave me a headache when I was sober looking into it. So here we go. All right. So picture this setting. It's England, the 1450s. King Henry the VI is in power. And there is no indoor plumbing. Shout out to my last murder house episode. So there's this guy, Richard Neville, the 16th Earl of Warwick, who later becomes known as the Kingmaker. And he is all about the power. So you know how in, like, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, when the mom goes, like, the husband is the head, but the wife is the neck that turns the head any way she wants?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So pretty much the way Richard works is that the king is the head and he is the neck, and he likes to turn the head any way he wants. And to make the names easier going forward, I'm going to refer to Richard Neville of the 16th Earl of Warwick as the Kingmaker from now on out, from here on out.
Kingmaker. Okay.
Kingmaker. Yes, he is the Kingmaker. There are so many people named Richard. Ridiculous. The Kingmaker was a supporter of King Henry and performed multiple military services for him, and likely fought in the war against Scotland. In 1452, Richard, the Duke of York, rose up against King Henry, and the Kingmaker stayed on King Henry's side, and the coup against the king was unsuccessful. Later, King Henry granted this guy, Edmund Buffon, the second Duke of Somerset, custody and lordship of Glamorgan, which was previously heritage of the Kingmaker. So it was his land, and the king was like, oh, here you go, Duke of Somerset, this is now yours. And it pissed off the Kingmaker, and he started thinking that, you know, this Richard of York guy might have been onto something. So the Kingmaker joined forces with Richard of York. Kingmaker in York started gaining allies and troops for the army. Lots of battles and years passed, and during the Battle of Wakefield in 1460, Richard of York dies in battle. His son, Edward the IV, takes his place, and the Kingmaker is his right-hand man. After two battles, about 2 weeks apart, the victory of Mortimer's Cross and a defeat at the Second Battle of St. Albans, Edward declared himself king. This led to the Battle of Towton, which is the bloodiest battle to take place on English soil. It had estimates of 9,000 to 20,000 people dying in battle. They don't know the exact amount because this happened way long ago, so people don't know the exact amount of people that died because people would take people out and bury them in their homes and stuff. And this is just based on the excavations of the battlefield.
Oh, it was take them out of what?
Oh, they take them out of the battlefield, burial grounds and move them to either be buried in their home areas or whatnot.
Right. Jesus, imagine having to go find your loved one like that.
Yeah. When things were built up in England too, it was built over a lot of these burial grounds. So they would excavate people and just move them to other areas. And this happened throughout history. So there's no full documentation of how many people were pulled out of this area and relocated.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah, so recent excavations of the battlefield uncovered skeletons that displayed the true brutality of the battle, including evidence of post-mortem mutilation. So people would just fuck with dead bodies. Not fuck. I mean, maybe, but... but they would just they would brutally mutilate these bodies.
For what purpose?
For shits and giggles, man. This battle led to the Edward of York's victory, and he overthrew King Henry. Edward did not have an easy time with the transition, as most nobles either remained loyal to Henry or they were just neutral. And then it's important to note too, Henry was still alive and he was just imprisoned in the Tower of London.
Mm-hmm.
This transition made Edward rely heavily on the Kingmaker and his family. The Kingmaker was allowed to work with France to create a treaty, and the Kingmaker actively worked to have the treaty include a marriage to Anne of France. What the Kingmaker didn't know is that Edward married Elizabeth Woodville, who was a widow with two sons, in secret. It was this action that the Kingmaker realized his role as being the neck to the head wasn't as strong as he thought. A few years later, Edward dismissed the Kingmaker's brother of his role of Lord Chancellor. So the Kingmaker is getting pissed.
Clearly.
By 1470, only 6 years into Edward's unpopular reign, the Kingmaker worked an alliance with France, and they worked together to reinstate King Henry, who was still just chilling in the Tower of London. An army of over 30,000 forced Edward to flee in exile to Bruges. Henry was replaced back on the throne, and he was described as mentally and physically fragile and was incapable of ruling, which, after being locked up in solitary defiance or whatever for over 6 years, is understandable.
Yeah.
Once the people saw King Henry back on the throne, everyone was kind of wondering, the fuck did we just do? This is not going to work. So while in Bruges, Edward gained support from Flemish merchants and made his way back to England in 1471.
Flemish?
Flemish is the Dutch. So he made his way back to England in 1471, and this was only a year after he went into exile. And he started to gain support which reached over 3,000 people. Edward and his troops entered London unopposed and took King Henry as prisoner. On April 14th, the Kingmaker was defeated and killed in the Battle of Barnet. King Henry died a few days later. On the books, it says he died from melancholy, but it is an accepted assumption that it was actually Edward who gave orders for his death.
So what's melancholy, though, at that point?
Depression? Sadness. Yeah. It's woe is me. I'm sad.
That was an actual death?
Not like suicidal melancholy. I think it's just broken heart. There's nothing left. I don't know.
It's just interesting.
So that happened in 1471. And then King Edward ruled for quite some time, but not that long of a time, because he fell fatally ill in 1483. At the time, people thought he was poisoned, but it is widely assumed that it could have been pneumonia or malaria that killed him, because they didn't know what pneumonia or malaria was at the time.
Right.
It's like if someone had a mysterious illness, it was poison.
Oh, really?
Basically.
We didn't know what malaria was at this point.
I mean, malaria isn't that like a brain thing? Like people didn't really. Jackie searched.
Jackie!
Fact check.
I know that those are the types of diseases that England brought over.
Well, it's from
this side of the world,
yeah.
But I don't know what it actually does.
It's probably not fun.
A lot of things in my head, because I have no medical training whatsoever, are like the flu to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I'm like, oh, some of you just don't feel good.
It's fully incorrect, and
they got coronavirus.
Yeah, really.
It's transmitted by bug bite.
Yeah.
Symptoms include fever, headache, and chills. It can progress to severe illness, often leading to death.
So basically every illness
in
my head starts the same anyway.
So in adults, symptoms. Multi-organ failure is frequent. In endemic areas, people may develop partial immunity, but it's usually not the case.
It's some rough stuff. So it's disputed what actually killed Edward. Dramatizations often do the poison excuse, but it could have been a plethora of things that killed Edward. The crown then fell to Edward V, who I will now refer to as King Edward Jr. or just Edward Jr.
Junior.
And Edward Jr. was just 12 years old at the time that he ascended to the throne. Edward Sr.'s will named his trusted brother Richard protector of the realm while Edward Jr. came of age. The noble council tried to coronate Edward Jr. immediately, but Richard repeatedly postponed the coronation. Richard and Ralph Shaw preached that Edward Sr. was already betrothed to someone else when he married Elizabeth Woodville, which meant that his marriage was invalid and the children were illegitimate.
Ah.
So I don't know how those fully took root, but an assembly of the Lords of Commons declared that Richard was now the legitimate king and Edward V or Edward Jr. did not have any right to the throne.
Yikes.
The day after this meeting, Richard had his coronation and became King Richard III.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Jr. and his younger brother Richard were locked in. See, everyone's named Edward.
Everyone, you're not kidding. Everyone is Richard.
Isn't it a thing that they have to take a royal name, though?
Yeah. When they become, when they're coronated or when they're about to take.
Yeah. But they're often named after people as well.
Right.
But Edward Jr. didn't have any names on the sites I looked at of what his name was before he took the throne. They're all, because this is all hella days ago, so.
Who knows? His a real name could have been lost to history at this point, because they called him that.
Very
called Herman.
Herman.
Herman Munchard.
Budget.
Budget?
Budget.
Budget.
So Edward Jr. and his younger brother Richard were locked into an apartment in the Tower of London. By the end of 1483, their princes were never seen again, and no one knows what exactly happened to them. It is widely accepted that the theory that they were both murdered on the orders of their uncle King Richard III to tie up any loose ends of people trying to claim the throne. Their fate is a historical mystery, and they are often referred to as the Princes in the Tower. Hmm. They are also a very popular ghost story.
Yeah.
So they're gone. Supporters.
So they're done.
Yeah.
Moving on.
More of them.
Supporters of Edward Sr. were furious that Richard had taken the throne and wanted to put Edward Jr. back on the throne. When word spread that Edward Jr. was likely dead, more Edwardian loyalists came together and chose Henry Tudor should take the throne in their stead. Henry Tudor and his troop of 5,000 people met King Richard and his troop of 8,000 people on Bosworth Field. So King Richard's troops heavily outweighed Henry Tudor's troops, but they still continued the battle. After some skilled fighting, King Richard III became surrounded. Jean Mullinet, a chronicler of the time, stated...
Jean Mullinet was a chronicler?
Mullinet?
Chronicler.
A chronicler of the time.
You have to say it like that every time.
All right. She was a chronicler at the time and stated that a Welshman struck the death blow with a halberd, which is like a super long axe that you need two hands. Like, it's super tall, probably like 6 feet, and you just like had an axe head on the top.
Ooh, like those big ones that knights carried.
Exactly. That's what the death blow was.
I know things.
King Richard III, which was a super long axe to a blow to the head that was so hard that the king's helmet was driven into his skull.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ow.
Rough stuff. His body was often thought lost to the ages, but during an excavation in 2013, his body was found under the remains of a church that was under a parking lot.
Oh, oh,
that's
damn.
Rough.
Oh, no.
Modern history just paving over grave sites.
Yeah, kings just parked a car on top of a king.
How weird is that, though?
Yeah. It's
that's
bonkers.
Crazy. I wonder how they found that.
They went to the battlefield area, I think, or like the location of a church that was in the area and got the rights to excavate the area. It wasn't like a construction thing, like they were just like redoing something. It was like actual like historical people excavating the area looking for his body. So.
They must have been pretty good to have been correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now we need to get those people to go look for Cleopatra's tomb. That's what we need.
Yes.
Why did I think we found her already?
Oh, no. She's, they don't know where she is.
Wow. Interesting.
So his skeleton had 11 wounds, 8 to his skull, and it actually suggests that he lost his helmet in battle. So the chronicler of the time saying that he had his helmet dug into his skull is probably actually inaccurate.
Hmm.
However, the back of his skull shows evidence that they had hacked off part of his skull. So
that's worse. That's
chunk worse, of it was missing.
That's worse.
Yeah, not fun.
He may have been, I thought he was going to be exaggerating. He may have underestimated or under-exaggerated.
Yes. So Richard III was the last monarch to die in battle. And his defeat marked the end of the York rule as the Tudors took over the throne.
Oh, the Tudors.
Yes.
I know things.
King Henry VII. I have this all in Roman numerals, and I'm not good at reading them, so it took me a second. So King Henry VII reigned over 20 years before he died, and then his son, the prolific King Henry VIII, who loved to change the rules and murder his wives, took over the throne. And that is the War of the Roses. It wiped out the entire Lancaster right to the throne and then overthrew the York rule of the throne to the point where the Tudors took over.
It's like hot potato with the monarchy.
It is.
Like
that. All happened within 30 years.
That's crazy.
What?
Yeah, this is just a 30-year span of time.
Jeez. Like, you can't have any safety.
No.
Not any period of time.
I think Elizabeth is safe now, but like back then.
Yeah.
I think she's good. I think.
Yeah. I think she's good.
Yeah. She's
she was trending on Twitter the other day and everyone was panicking.
I panicked.
It's like whenever Betty White like trends, I'm like, no.
Yes. So like that's two. 2020 can't have either one.
No.
2020's had enough people.
Exactly.
Isn't that bizarre to think, though, like, Queen Elizabeth is, like, what, 95 years old?
Yeah.
Which means that probably in the next, like, at least 5 years that there's going to be a new monarch in England?
You don't know. Yeah. I think I have great aunts that are 100-something.
Yeah. True. The Queen Mom lived to be, what, like, 101 or 100-something?
Yeah, something like that. It's crazy times.
Yeah, for sure.
Couple overthrows in that one, so that's fun.
Just a couple.
Yeah. Shall we take a break to get refills?
Let's get some refills.
Mixology time.
Mixology. I'm learning to use my new bar kit that Chelsea got me.
Yay.
No more measuring cups.
Yeah, no more measuring cups.
No more measuring cups that are supposed to be for baking. BRB.
We are back with our refills, and we are ready to continue drinking and continuing to get depraved. So.
We're back in the chair, Jackie has for us.
Yeah, let's turn to Jackie now.
Oh, thanks. Jackie, I'm actually really excited about yours.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest, what I'm about to talk about is probably the one of the revolutions in history that I've always been the most interested in, because it sets a lot up for different philosophy, like social philosophies and things like that. So what I'm going to be talking to you guys about today is the Bolshevik Revolution and the execution of the Romanov family in Russia in July of 1918.
So I'm so excited.
Yeah, this series of events, it's what brought the violent end to monarchy in Russia, and it kicked off what would essentially become communist rule and the creation of the Soviet Union. So it was like the catalyst for these events. So before we dive in, just to give you some backstory, Russia before the Russian revolutions in the early 20th century was like a lot of countries in Europe was led by monarchy, and the Romanovs were the imperial family of Russia since the late 16th century. So the Romanov family had held power in Russia for a very, very long time. At the turn of the 20th century, Russia was a social and a political tinderbox. It was just waiting for that spark to kind of explode into revolution and revolt.
And boy, did it explode.
It sure did. So Tsar Nicholas...
Russia's go hard or don't go at all.
They go big or go home. And they went big. So Tsar Nicholas II took over the throne in 1894, and he was, to say he was underprepared for leadership would be wildly understated. He just wasn't ready at all to deal with leadership, to deal with the country's challenges at the time. So before, pretty recently before he took over, his father abolished serfdom in Russia in 1861. So serfdom is, if you don't know what that is, it's essentially indentured servitude. So the peasant class, if they don't own property, they have to serve people who do, either by cleaning or in other ways. So it was a very medieval practice, social
structure. I was going to say, isn't that like King Arthur's status? That's the age we're in?
But no, when you think about it, like,
this is the 1800s.
Yeah, like, I was
yeah,
trying to say,
like how
Tsar
old
Nicholas
it is.
The second came into power at, like, the end of the 1800s, so the serfdom was still intact. Like, serfdom was abolished in 1861, and Nicholas took over for his father in 1894. So it was really recent. But yeah, to put it in context, the rest of Europe abolished serfdom in the Middle Ages. So
yeah, that's insane.
they were a little behind the times there. But what that did is it freed a growing population of working class citizens and allowed them to assemble freely, but it still kept the power of the government with the monarchy and with the wealthy. So you kind of have this social
imbalance.
Yeah, imbalance that's just kind of ready to tip. So Russia, just like it was late to abolish serfdom, was also late to industrialize. And at the turn of the 20th century, so the early 1900s, to the rest of the world, Russia was very much a underdeveloped third-party country.
Third wheel in it.
2020 has ruined you.
Definitely ruined my English language. So the Industrial Revolution, which had already taken hold in Europe and in the United States, didn't get to Russia until 1890 to 1910. That's when they went through their Industrial Revolution. So they were pretty behind. But as a result of that, the major cities in Russia saw population explosions as people started moving into the cities to take these new industrial jobs, which led to overcrowding in the cities, destitute living conditions for this new working class. So not only are they serving under the monarchy, they're living in squalor, essentially.
So and basically they abolished the serfdom and then said, good luck.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. So the population boom that came with becoming industrialized, also paired with a harsh winter, led to a lot of food shortages and inflation. And this is as Tsar Nicholas is kind of kicking off his reign. So it's not off to a great start. Protests erupt in 1905, where the working class took to the streets to protest the monarchy. because of how they were living. They weren't getting any support. And Tsar Nicholas had his troops intervene to quiet the demonstrations, and hundreds of people were killed in what became known as the Bloody Sunday Massacre of 1905. The working class responded to that by striking. So they all went on strike, which crippled an already fragile economy, and the Russian Revolution of 1905 began.
Is this question, I'm sorry, this may sound dumb, is this because they're seeing the rest of the world at this point? Because we're starting to get a bit more communication, like they can see what's going on in other countries, so they're like,
I don't know if it's like this? Seeing what's going on in other countries as much as it's seeing what's going on with other classes in their own country. So they're seeing the wealthy autocrats keep power, take power. They're getting a lot of the benefits of this new society, and they're being left behind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure, too, from what I remember, is that Tsar Nicholas II outwardly spoke about how he didn't want the position. He didn't want to, rule. He didn't want to be there. But yet, he's in the position, he's getting all this wealth, and he doesn't even want to do it, and people are literally starving in the streets.
They're pissed, yeah. Oh, they're living in the winter, they're living in the Winter Palace, with jewels, wealth. His wife is the granddaughter of Queen Victoria, so optics were not great.
No.
At that point for him.
Yeah, and it just gets worse. I'm sure you're about to get into it, but what really turns the tide is this one person that joins the fray.
Yeah. Is it my favorite person?
Rasputin.
Might be.
Yes. Actually, my favorite person is the cartoon bat, but...
And I give him a hiya, and a hiya, and then a ha, and then I kicked him, sir.
Oh my god.
Cute cartoon. Not even close to what actually happened. No.
It's on Disney Plus now. Everyone, please go watch it. We're not sponsored by them, but I 10 out of 10 recommend.
Yeah. 10 out of 10 not based on our childhood. No, but brings joy.
Yeah. It does bring joy.
I also really like the musical. And
I feel a musical too.
The musical is fantastic, but I saw it without knowing that they changed the fact that Rasputin and Bartok were not in it. And they introduced the villain who was played by Raman Karamanlu, Kamalu? I forget how to say his last name. But he is fine, and I love his voice. But I was like, oh, I love this guy, but where the fuck is Rasputin? Where's Bartok?
I don't know how to segue out of that.
I know. Back to the story.
Thank you, Bartok. So that kicks off the Russian Revolution of 1905. So when the bloodshed stops, Tsar Nicholas promises reform. And the way he shows this is by forming representative assemblies, which they called Dumas, which were essentially they were formed to give the illusion that the working class citizens would have a say in government. So there was a Tsar, and on the other side there were these Dumas, and they were supposed to work together to govern. That didn't happen. In reality, what actually happened is anytime one of the Dumas went against Tsar Nicholas, he would disband them, and corruption just continued to run rampant in the government at this point in time.
For a second, I thought you said Dula.
What?
Oh, she thought you said Dula.
No, Duma with an M.
There's all these home birthers hanging around.
It's very progressive to get a bunch of doulas around. I'm not sure what they would contribute.
Is the Great War or World War I? World War. Okay, I didn't know if it was happening. I don't remember when it started.
Well, we're still in, 1905, but, okay. So this is the matchbox building. The spark is World War I. So World War I happens, and Russia enters the war in 1914 to support France and Britain, and it was a dumpster fire for Russia. They got their asses kicked. So the Imperial Army at the time was no match because, again, remember, they were late to the Industrial Revolution, so their imperial troops didn't stand a chance against Germany and other industrialized nations that had this weaponry that they just couldn't match. So they actually suffered the most casualties of any other nation in the First World War. On top of that, the cost of the war led to food and fuel shortages and inflation. So an already crippled economy was getting even more pressure put onto it. Tsar Nicholas actually ended up leaving Russia for a point of time to serve on the front, leaving his wife Alexandra to oversee the empire. And in comes Rasputin. So
Big mistake.
So Alexandra was already unpopular with the Russian people because, again, she was of German heritage. She was Queen Victoria's granddaughter. People did not like her to begin with. And on top of that, her closest advisor, who actually ended up having the most influence in the Russian government during this time, was this healer that earned the trust of the Romanov family because he supposedly healed their son Alexei, who was a hemophiliac. But he was an asshole.
Yes.
Were they all hemophiliacs?
So he couldn't clot his blood, and I don't know if you get into it, so if you get into it, just cut this part out and we get it. But what Rasputin did is he was a faith healer, so he didn't believe in medicine, and whenever Alexei got cut or would be bleeding, people would give him aspirin, and they didn't know aspirin was a blood thinner. And right. When Rasputin came around, he didn't believe in that medicine, so he would be like, no, like, you're not giving him medicine, and all of a sudden his blood, like, would slow down and eventually.
And so they thought he healed them.
Yeah, but really he was just depriving him of a blood thinner, which was killing him, essentially.
Oh, and I thought they were all hemophiliac.
No, just the son was.
The son was, but it's important because it was their firstborn son, so he's heir to the throne. Okay. And they kept his condition secret from the people because they didn't want that getting out, that the heir to the throne has this potentially life-threatening disease.
Hemophiliacs also are usually the result of inbred.
Right.
Fun fact.
Of inbreeding?
Yeah. Inbreeding, yeah. So Rasputin, not all of them. So if you're a hemophiliac right now, I'm not saying that, you know. It's just one of the reasons. I'm so sorry. It's because all the royals kept marrying each other over and over and over again.
Well, yeah, you got to keep it in the family. That was the whole point of imperial rule. So Rasputin becomes Alexandra's closest advisor. They fired a bunch of elected officials, which doesn't help their standing with the public, which is already on shaky ground to begin with. And the people just hated him. When he wasn't working, he lived this debaucherous lifestyle that...
He liked the sex.
He did like the sex. Yes.
And he had a weird penis.
We won't get into that. But... but he was hated. Strongly. So... this is when everything starts to fall apart. The people at this point now have no confidence in their monarchs whatsoever, and the calls to overthrow the monarchy become stronger because now it's not just the working class that's calling for it, but people who are more moderate, living a moderate, normal, like middle class lifestyle, are seeing what's going on with Alexandra, Rasputin, all the corruption, and they're saying we need change. So Rasputin ends up getting murdered in December of 1916, and it starts the series of events which would eventually become the Bolshevik Revolution. So it kicks off.
It's just fun to say.
Bolshevik?
Bolshevik.
It is a fun word.
It's like the bourgeoisie.
Yeah. Which I do get to say later.
Yes! So many fun words come from Russia. Thank you so much, Russia.
Great language. So in March of 1917, demonstrators who were hungry, starving, they were in line for bread. They take to the streets again in St. Petersburg. And this time they're supported by huge crowds of industrial workers who were on strike. The crowds clash with police, calling to overthrow the monarchy, and refuse to disperse. On March 11th, Tsar Nicholas sends the army in to quell the demonstrations and in some cases killing the protesters. But the demonstrators remained, they stayed strong, refused to leave, and it was the troops Tsar Nicholas's troops that ended up wavering. On March 12th, the next day, the Dumas, so the people's representatives, formed a provisional government, and Tsar Nicholas ended up abdicating the throne a few days later, thus bringing an end, at first a peaceful end, to monarchy in Russia. So he steps down and hands government over to the people.
Not good enough.
I
didn't know he stepped down.
He did. Mm-hmm. He abdicated the throne in 1917.
I thought they just straight up murdered him.
Yeah. And for people who always think that this is a long time ago, this is after the Titanic sink.
Wait, what?
Yeah, this all happens after the Titanic sink. The Titanic sink in 1914.
Yeah, this is 1917.
Ooh, yeah. We're in 1917. It seems like so much longer ago, but it's not.
My grandma was born soon after this.
It's a little over a century ago, so it's not too long ago. So the new provisional government was led by the bourgeoisie class. So a lot of elite, middle class, upper class, liberals, led by this lawyer Alexander Kerensky. And they did a lot of good in the short time that they held power in Russia. They established free speech, equality before the law, and the right for unions to organize and strike. They also opposed violent social revolution. So they did a lot of good. What killed them, though, is Kerensky at the time was the Secretary of War, and World War I was still going on, and he kept Russia in the fold in this war that was already wildly unpopular with most of the working class. So he keeps Russia in the war, which the economic impact continued to fuel unrest. So instead of quelling unrest, it just continued to fuel it. People weren't happy.
Dumb question.
No dumb question.
Which side of the war was Russia on?
Our side. Britain. The Allied.
Got it.
They're on our side on both. We didn't... Our relations with Russia didn't go cold until the Cold War. They were in the Allied.
You did there.
Yeah. They were part of the Allied nations for both World War I and World War II.
I don't remember.
They were also behind the times, so they weren't extremely helpful.
Right. But they did lend their support.
Yes.
How they could.
More friends are better than zero friends.
Exactly. Unless so the people...
back.
Yeah, which is
what's about to happen.
So the bourgeoisie Duma government is not popular. And in November 1917, they are overthrown again, this time by the Bolshevik Party, who was led at the time by Vladimir Lenin, who was a revolutionary leftist at the time. In its place, he wanted to establish a government that, instead of being led by the upper class, he wanted the government to be led by councils of workers, soldiers, and peasants. So to get to this, they occupied government buildings and other strategic locations in St. Petersburg. And it didn't take long for the Duma government to fall and for Lenin to take over and lead Russia. He built the new government under his lead, and he, of course, became the dictator of the world's first communist state and developed the Soviet Union. So while this is... Once that happens, it kicks off the Russian Civil War. So the two fighting fractions were the Red Army, who supported Lenin, and the White Army, who supported the bourgeoisie and the socialist Democrats, or Democratic Socialists, and wanted that Duma government to be put back into place. While this is all happening, the Romanovs are trying to get asylum. They're trying to get out of the country. They're fearing for their lives. So they write to... I know for a fact they write to the British monarchy, and I think the other one is Germany, seeking asylum, because again, Alexandra is Queen Victoria's grandmother, so they're trying to get out.
I think it could have been, it was Germany or France, because the grandma was in France, wasn't she?
She was the Queen Victoria's granddaughter.
She was Queen Victoria's granddaughter, but they get turned down. No one will take them in.
What?
And they end up getting kidnapped by the Bolsheviks, who put them in hiding and essentially move them from safe house to safe house while the civil war is going on. The entire time they have them in captivity, they are planning and plotting the family's execution. So this happens late in the night on July 16th, 1918. The guards go down to the family. They tell them, get ready. We're moving you again. Get your stuff together. Let's go. Get ready to move. And while they're gathering their possessions, they open fire on them. So they start by shooting them. Then they end up beating them to death with their own hands, with the butts of their guns. They then use sulfuric acid to make the bodies unrecognizable and coated them with benzene to burn them. While the news got out that the family was assassinated, nobody knew where the bodies were, and the location of their bodies wasn't made aware or wasn't made public until the Soviet Union fell, which was in the early 1990s. So 80 years, no one knew where the family was.
Is that why the whole Anastasia rumor got started?
Yeah, because they also sewed, like, their family heirlooms, jewelry, religious artifacts or religious jewelry that was important to them. The women were sewing it into their clothes.
Yeah.
So that's like the music box kind of comes into play.
The original shooting, I think it was just the queen, the king, and Alexei that was killed right away. But the girls had the jewels sewn into their clothes and it ricocheted the bullets. And then they were like bayoneted to death.
Yeah. They're essentially beaten to death.
Yeah. And there's four daughters, I think.
It was four daughters and Alexei, because there were five kids total that were killed. Wow. Yep. So the Civil War continues until 1923, when the Red Army just claims victory. And that's what created the Soviet Union, which stayed in power until the 90s, the early 90s. Russia!
Woo! Russia!
Collusion.
Good story. It's one of my favorites.
Mine too.
Yeah. And like the Anastasia one is because Anastasia wasn't with, like, one of the daughters was missing from the burial pile, but it was either Maria or Anastasia that was in the other one. And it's still disputed to say who it was that was, like, in the other pile that they just found, like, 10 years ago. So
crazy.
Fun time. That's something that you could figure out now, right? Because if they're sisters, you'll just know that they're sisters. You're not going to know. It's not like there was a record of who was who DNA-wise.
Yeah, unless you had, like, explicit, like, DNA from said person. Like, you can't really pin it. But they do know that they were all related. So they found the entire family.
Yeah.
And they also killed, like, the butler and the maid of the family, too.
Yeah.
Which, that also disputes the Disney movie, because wasn't that guy a chef, the older gentleman?
It also didn't happen in the palace like the movie said it did. Like,
right, they had fled,
Yeah,
Anastasia
they had
escaped in the palace before. In the movie, but, like, in real life, she was a prisoner, and, like, they shaved all their heads, and, like, they were, like, basically looked like nuns at the end of their time because they were super covered up and like wearing headdresses and stuff. And some rough stuff.
That's so sad.
There's some pictures of them. There's like the last known picture of Anastasia online somewhere.
Yeah, I put the picture of Nicholas and Alexandra on the drive. And Rasputin. He's in there too.
Nicholas was a handsome man, by the way.
Yeah, he was also an asshole.
Asshole completely. He didn't want the throne. Like, right before he took it, like, I think it was his dad or his grandfather, like, were just assassinated before he assumed, like, the role. He's like, I don't think I want this guy. Like,
well, and his father never spent any time preparing him to take over either. So he was stepping into this new social order. So...
yeah, it was.
You didn't want anything to do with that. There he is. Rasputin.
You're blurred. Yeah. You got that blurred background going.
Well, he's.
You should look up his penis that is online.
I don't think I will.
I'll pass.
It has like this little pocket in it.
I don't think. I need to know, but I also don't, I think that was cut out of one of our first episodes. One of our first episodes, we got off onto such a tangent and kept talking about his penis in a jar.
It is.
Yes.
Well, supposedly it is. People also think it might be a cow or some sort of animal's penis, but I'm an optimist and like to think it's actually Rasputin's.
I don't really think that's being an optimist.
Yeah, optimist wouldn't be the word. I would use there.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Do not let your kids listen to this episode.
Any of the episodes, really.
Like... I already put explicit on all of our episodes.
Good call. Karina, what you got?
I have, and I give you, Rameses III.
Ooh.
So he's known as the last great pharaoh, which, if you know anything about Egyptian history, the Rameses line of succession was super successful. They were known as super powerful. They were not royal by blood. They were some sort of warrior soldiers that came into power, and they were known as amazing part of this line. So Rameses III is kind of known as the last like great pharaoh of Egypt, because it all takes a downhill turn from here.
And I like ancient Egypt because they love cats.
That's the only reason to like them. That's the only reason you like them.
Yeah. I have cats. I have cats, okay? Oh, yeah. Cats.
Well, they found, in recent years, they found this tomb of a lot of pharaohs, like a whole line of pharaohs that priests had hidden in a place so that they could avoid grave robbers. So they buried them in this kind of hidden tomb, and there was a lot of things that came out of that. But turns out Rameses III was really murdered and did not die of natural causes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Murder.
Murder. On this show, how dare you?
So, to give you a little bit of backstory, Rameses III had two great wives, which are more senior wives. Usually, the senior wives were the ones whose sons were the ones who took on the line. They were the ones whose sons became pharaoh. So he named two great wives, which really was the beginning of his problems. The two great wives, their names were Queen Esse and Queen Taya. Their sons were about the same age, too, so this kind of made it even more of a rivalry between the two of them. Yeah. So not only do you have two great wives, the kids are also similar ages, so there's no clear line of succession. Mm. In comes a conspiracy to kill the pharaoh. There's a papyrus which records the record of a trial that took place after the death of Rameses III. It accuses his harem of conspiring against the pharaoh led by his wives. According to the papyrus, am I saying that right? Papyrus? Yeah. He was killed in his own palace, too. So his harem got basically the best of everything. This is a group of women that they get the best clothes, they get the best jewelry, etc. Many of these women are of powerful families in the community. They're princesses from foreign lands, and they had their own political influence, and they also had their own political agendas a lot of the time. And it's said that because he named two great wives, there was no clear line of succession. Queen Taya was the mother of Prince Pentaware. Sorry, it's the drink.
Pyrex. Pyrex.
So Queen Taya's
of son was...
Queen Taya's son was Prince Pentaware. Queen Esse's son was Rameses Jr., basically, which is Rameses IV. And he was the... So Queen Esse's son was the one who was favored by the pharaoh, really, to take over. It wasn't really said, though, and it wasn't really outright. It was just kind of this general feeling. So it sowed some sort of mistrust and distaste with Queen Taya. Backstory on Rameses. Egyptologists know that during his reign, he fought off a lot of invaders. They called them seaworthy people. They were basically people coming in from apparently the sea.
Men.
They were seamen. So he goes to war. He starts off his reign really strong, like badass. He goes off to war. He returns home with 12,000 hands of the enemies that he went off to fight. So this is a real
guy. Did he just have like a boat full of hands, or like?
I don't know. It said he came back with 12,000 hands and like showed them off.
Where do you put them all? Like, are they just around the town giving like high fives to people? Like,
a morbid high five.
That's a lot of hands. Like, it's a bucket full.
It's a morbid high five, let me tell you. So also during his reign, so he starts off really badass. He's really great. So there's a there's a few years of drought during his reign that crops start to fail. The empire turns into a bit of an uproar because of this. So his reign starts to go kind of downhill. And there was actually the first recorded strike of workers. An angry mob storms the palace. Like, it's not going great for Ramesses III right now.
Not looking good.
Yeah. So we find out later in life, like in the last 2 or 3 years, that he was killed in the 32nd year of his reign. And he died in the same year and month that a conspiracy theory was on trial. Like a conspiracy to kill him happened. And the trial papyrus tells us that this conspiracy was recorded and like happened. So it's super convenient that it also happened the same year he actually died. So that's what we're led to believe, that the conspiracy actually was successful.
Right. I just also want to point out, y'all make fun of me for being drunk, but Karina just said 32nd.
32nd year of his reign. That doesn't...
You said 32nd.
I can't go last, guys. It's hard.
We all go last. We all rotate. So we feel you.
Not a fun place to be.
The blurred background shows you how I look at my notes. That's what my notes look like to me right now.
All blurred. It is a 32nd note. I'm sorry, I'm done.
When he died. He's not 32 when he dies. He's in his 32nd year of reign when he dies. Okay. So he's like middle-aged, because I think he took over when he was really young, too.
Gotcha.
Egypt.
Yeah, they all took over when they were like 6.
Yeah, they always take over when they're super young, and I don't think he was any exception. So recent science told us they did a CT scan of the mummy, because they found him recently with all these, I think it was 40 other mummies. They found Ramesses III and Ramesses II and Ramesses I and some other unknown people with him, because it's 40 people in total that they found. So they did a CT scan and they found a cut so deep that it goes to his vertebrae, slicing down to the bone while he was still alive.
Yee. Oh, God.
So he's definitely murdered.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say so.
Shanked.
Yeah. The CT scan also showed that the pharaoh had a serious heart condition that made him super weak. And he may have been, like, in pain while he was going upstairs doing the easiest of things. He may have been in super heart pain. Because they found...
Relatable.
They found some sort of, forget what it was called, but markings on his heart that showed that it was not healthy.
Isn't that crazy, though? Like, because the Egyptians knew how to preserve, like, their organs and everything so well that modern technology can see that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane. There's one part, I'll get to it in just a minute, but when I was reading about it, there's an unknown mummy amongst this burial, which we will get to. But the unknown mummy had in his mouth something that was still sticky.
Ew.
What?
The scientists, like, remarked that, like, this resin that they found in the guy's mouth was still sticky. And I was like, that's what?
Yeah. Egyptians gross. Were next level. They were probably, like, ancient aliens. Aliens.
In some ways they were ahead of everyone else. In some ways they were right with
behind the times.
Everyone's in the times at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we know that the pharaoh is weak at this point. He's nearing his middle age. He's weak mentally because of the economic downturn of the country that's happening around him, but he's also weak physically. Queen Taya is the ringleader of this conspiracy because she wants her son to be Prince Pentuer to be pharaoh. Pentuer was named
Pyrex.
Pentuer Pyrex was named... of Tupperware.
Oh my god. I'm never gonna get through this.
I feel like no matter what section you go in, Karina, it's where we always lose our shit.
I know.
You go first, second, or third, it just goes downhill from there.
It really does. So on this record, on this papyrus that talks about the trial, Pentuer is named that he was caught and he was put on trial as well. But since he was a prince, his was more private. There's not much about what actually happened to him on this main document that probably went out to more public knowledge.
Prince Pyrex of Tupperware sealed from the public.
Yeah. And the trial, my notes say trial papaya, by the way. This sentence literally reads, "The trial papaya describes a complex conspiracy."
I mean, papayas are super, you know,
stupid autocorrect.
They're shifty ways.
Oh, stupid fantastic. Autocorrect.
Fantastic. You just keep rereading papaya, don't you?
Queen Taya gained supporters amongst her own harem. So the first place she turns to is her fellow ladies.
Her
like,
bitches.
We gotta get this, we've gotta
the
get
rest
this
of the
man.
Bitches. Yo, we bitches, let's man. Get together.
Off the throne.
Right now.
And put my son. So she starts to gain, she goes and gains supporters from her own harem, but they also needed support from outside of the harem because they couldn't do it alone. Because for whatever reason, they need some outside help. So Pai Bakamana, goodness, that's, yeah. He's in charge of food. I guess he's like the royal shopper of food. And he says some sort of access outside of the palace where he can get in and out. And kind of becomes the messenger, I think.
It's like how prison people, like, I've seen Orange is the New Black, and they used to put notes into, like, the food supply. And that's how they, like, communicated with, like, the outside world.
Yeah, because as much as the harem
Orange
was...
is the New Black is fact.
Because as much as the harem was kind of living this lavish lifestyle, they had all this jewelry. They lived I don't want to say great life because they were kind of prisoners.
Mm.
Because it's not like they could leave.
Right.
I don't know, what do you want to call it? Service. Even though they were living in lavish lifestyle, they were kind of trapped in certain ways.
Yeah.
So they needed this outside help. They needed this guy to go out and help them gain more support from other places. And a lot of people were named on this the trial papyrus. Even the king's, yes, even the king's personal physician was in on this conspiracy to kill him.
Damn.
Yeah. Evidence suggests that the harem actually ambushed him, and we don't know who actually cut his throat.
Yikes.
Could have been any one of these ladies. They succeed. Harem kills the pharaoh, but Pentawer does not become the pharaoh. So something had to have gone wrong. We're not sure what goes wrong. This one archaeologist has the thought that he found evidence that Ramses IV actually caught two of the conspirators with some ancient texts that kind of pointed to that they were trying to reduce the pharaoh's power because they believed a lot in magic
mm-hmm.
at this point, and they thought they needed to pull some of his godlike power from him before they actually murdered him. So they were looking up how to do that. And I, from my understanding, two of the conspirators were caught with those texts that said how to do that by the other brother who was supposed to take the throne, Queen Essay's son.
Right.
So
Pyrex?
No. Pentawer is Queen Taya's son who she wants to raise to the throne. Queen Essay's son is Ramses IV.
Okay.
So Ramses IV catches these two conspirators and basically exposes this whole plot. He becomes the new pharaoh, and then the trial begins. From that text, we know that four suicides were ordered, and one was burned alive.
Oh, wait. They sentence people to suicide. Like, you need to go kill yourself. Like,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Oh my.
To them, that's the lesser of the death.
That's the easy sentence. Oh my god.
Because to them, burning someone to death is a double death because your body is not preserved to go into the afterlife, so you die two deaths.
That's true. Okay.
That makes sense.
Gotcha.
So they know that four people were ordered to commit suicide, and then this one person was burned alive, and then the prince's trial is said to have been held in private, and we think that Pentawer was allowed to kill himself based on the record that they found.
Gotcha.
Come back to that mysterious mummy that they found amongst those other 40 who they were able to
find
identify.
Stuff, yeah.
So they called him Mummy E, and he's the mummy... If you look at the pictures, I'll have to show you guys. But if you look at the pictures, he has a horrified face. He's not buried like the rest of the mummies. When they opened the sarcophagi, there was a stench that came out of the sarcophagi that the archaeologist said that was not normal for when they've opened hundreds of sarcophagi, and this was not normal. It smelled awkward. He was contorted in a face of horror. Like, it's scary.
Oh, no.
And they found this sticky resin in his mouth that was just also not normal. They didn't know what that was from. He was wrapped in some sort of not the traditional linen that was meant for him not to have a easy trip into the afterlife. Like, this guy was buried in disgrace. So we knew that part. So based on this, we haven't found pentaware yet. Did DNA tests on Mummy E and found that not only is he Ramses III's son, he also, they think he hung himself because there was rope that suggested, science is so cool because they figured out that he was hung like kind of sideways and that the rope pulled on only one side of his neck, suggesting that he was a suicidal hanging.
Oh my God.
So they figure that Pentaware was sentenced to the suicide. We know he was sentenced to the suicide. This is Pentaware who was killed as part of this conspiracy. So even if he wasn't part of the conspiracy, he was definitely named and definitely allowed to kill himself.
Right.
And the records do not say what happened to Queen Taia, Miss Mastermind, and all the other women of the harem. There's nothing about them. And one of the scientists believed that they must have been burned alive because they have never found their bodies.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
So that is why you never have two wives. Oh, I forgot to mention this part, though, that they not only did they find the rope portion that suggested he was had rope around his neck shortly before he died. They did a scan on his body, and I didn't know this happened apparently when you're suffocated, your chest expands and your rib cage actually expands. So they could tell that he suffocated based on his rib cage.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Science is cool.
I'm just thinking these mummies are, this is before Christ here.
Yeah.
This is BC times. Yeah. The fact that this is in the last 2 to 3 years, by the way,
that's crazy.
Figured out this murder mystery.
Jeez, that's nuts.
Yeah. And there's not much of the text. It's not the trial papyrus is not fully intact. There's a lot of it. So maybe that's where the parts that missing, maybe that's where they talk about the burning to death. But that's what everyone figures, is that they must have been burned to death and left no trace of, because their crimes fit that level of punishment.
So cool. I'm looking at the full body of Pence Pyrex of Tupperware, and he is so well preserved.
It's insane.
Pentaware.
Pentaware.
Pyrex.
Prince Pyrex of Tupperware
is very well preserved. Good job.
They're all pretty preserved. But they almost, it's like they were so close to overthrowing him.
Yep. They had it in their sights.
They had it in their sights. And it was mentioned in one of the, in one of my research documentaries that I was looking through, that they think somebody tipped off Ramses IV, that they were betrayed somewhere in their conspiracy bubble. I guess you can call it, because if you think about it, every new person you ask to join your conspiracy is another person who's trusted with a secret that could kill you.
Keep it small.
Yeah.
But they couldn't keep it small because they needed Pentaware to become Pharaoh. Right. So they needed support from people outside of the harem because they don't have that type of power to just say, hey, Ramses IV is not the Pharaoh. Pentaware is now deal.
Right.
So they needed some sort of support outside of their bubble.
It's like how Fight Club, how did they get other members when you're not allowed to talk about Fight Club?
Again with Fight Club.
That's
Did I do this before?
I did it last episode.
I have burning questions about Fight Club and how they got more members, okay?
I think you asked like the exact same question too.
Did I really?
Yeah, I think you did.
It sounded familiar when I was saying it.
It's okay. We still love you.
Thank you.
Jackie gets to pick our next episode topic. So yeah. Jackie, what are we doing?
What is the topic going to be?
Pandemics and how they affect yes. societies.
No, you didn't.
That's I'm not so it. Excited.
You I'm cannot so use COVID-19.
Is it because you're using it or are you talking or?
No, I actually, I don't know which one.
I think it's too soon.
It's too soon. Like, we're not going to know the full impact of COVID-19 on society for years, but I don't know which one I'm going to do yet.
Did you guys see the TikTok of the kids in 2050 doing their COVID-19 projects for school? And it's like all the highlighting.
It was like stars and like,
yeah. Like, I hate this.
Yes.
Too soon, bro. Too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah.
But a way to end the year.
Okay, I'm excited about that.
Pandemic. They happen every century. There's plenty to do.
There is plenty.
There's so many. There's so many good ones. I mean, they're all horrible, but there's so many good ones. Like, can you imagine if the bubonic plague didn't happen? That wiped out over half of Europeans' population. Like, where would our population be now? It took over 200 years for them to get back just to pre-bubonic plague levels of, like, people. Like,
yeah, exactly.
If that didn't happen, like, do you think, like, this is, like, nature's way of population control?
It's the reset button. I do. I believe it's the reset button. It's nature's way of going too far.
Yeah.
Reel it
when
in.
When I was looking into overthrown monarchies. Yeah. When I was looking into overthrown monarchies, one of the big things that some documentaries were talking about were the Hawaiian death toll because of Europeans bringing illnesses that they were not used to
were on an island.
It's the same thing with the Native Americans. They did it on purpose too. Like, people who had smallpox, like, they made smallpox blankets and gave it to Native Americans, and then the Native Americans had these blankets that were infected, and then they all died.
Like, so much. There is so much.
Like, this podcast could go on for forever.
But shout out to my mother for the recommendation. She listened to our first episode and she goes, "You should do plagues." I was like, "Oh,
we're living in a plague."
Yeah, excellent. Well, that sounds
exciting. Excited to delve into that. So that sounds like a good place to end it, though.
Yes.
If you haven't already, thank you all for listening. Yes, follow us on Tipsy Depraved Podcast on Instagram and Tipsy Depraved on Twitter. And I think we're going to have a TikTok coming soon, and hopefully you will follow us there too. I don't know what that one's called yet. It's either going to be Tipsy Depraved or a Tipsy Depraved Podcast. Oh, Karina's got it. Karina will let you know.
Tipsy Depraved Podcast.
There we go. Follow us and enjoy. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.